Hebrews chapter 11, and this morning we'll be looking at verses 17 through 19. Before we get started, while you're turning in your Bibles, I want to encourage everybody to come out tonight so we can hear our brother Tung Pi give us firsthand account of how things are going in Myanmar. And we pray for you, brother, and for your father, and all the ministers there and the churches. And so I encourage everybody to come out to hear that, so he can tell us how what God's doing there in Myanmar and how we can continue praying for them. So do come out for that. Hebrews chapter 11. Do you like puzzles? Some people do. Well, I'd like you to help me with this one. Why is it when we so often are too lazy to do our own spiritual duties that we try to take on those duties, those responsibilities that are far too big for us? So often we don't do the things that God has assigned for us to do, but yet we go and try to take on His job. 11 years ago this week, we flew to Russia to meet our girls for the first time. And we like to say that what happened is the stork got blown way off course, and it took us years to find them, 12 and 9, respectively. Well, with parenting come certain parental responsibilities. I'm required by God to protect them, to provide for them, to teach them, to correct them, to love them. But I'm never responsible, I'm never held responsible for how they turn out. I'm not responsible for the choices that they make. They're good kids. But I also know that they're sinners. And I know that sinners can make bad choices. I often find myself perplexed as to how God is going to work things out. And so I sometimes try to take over that job by worrying. I have a gray hair for every time I've tried to worry them to be okay. But for the last 11 years, my responsibility has been actually rather simple. Trust God and obey. That's what He has called me to do. I don't do my job very well. And then when I try to do His job, it's a disaster. Because what I do is I worry, and that eats me up, and then that just, you know, makes everybody else miserable because I'm miserable. And what I need to do is, whenever I am tempted to take God's responsibilities onto my shoulders, I need to remind myself that it's not my problem. How they turn out isn't my problem. And I need to remember that. Now, I'm pretty sure I'm not alone in this, and it may not have to do with your kids. It may have to do with a lot of other things. But I think I'm not alone, that we tend to take God's responsibility onto our shoulders, and because we're not God, the best we can do is worry about it, which is the worst thing we can do. And so this is our challenge this morning. How do we deal with that? How do we learn to trust and obey? Well, I'd like you to follow with me as I read Hebrews chapter 11, and I'm going to start with a couple of the foundation verses there, verse 1 and verse 6, before I read our passage. So Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. As the author is launching into this wonderful chapter on faith, as he's trying to help us understand how it is that we're supposed to trust God, walk with God, please God, he gives us these wonderful examples of people just like us, who are just as messed up as we are, who walked by faith. Not perfectly, a long ways from that, but they walked by faith. And so he says, now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Now verse 6. And without faith it is impossible to please Him. For the one who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who seek Him. And now our passage, verse 17. After going through saying by faith, certain one did this, by faith, he now picks up again with Abraham. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise men even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. Abraham's story of offering up Isaac as a sacrifice has forever had a prominent place in Jewish literature. And so it's a perfect story for the writer to go and draw upon as he is trying to help his Jewish readers understand faith, that they need to live by faith. They held the story up. This was Abraham's most severe test. And so what he's showing them, though, because these believers came out of Judaism into biblical Christianity to trust in Christ by faith, and he knows that they're tempted to go back to Judaism into works righteousness. And what he wants to show them is he said, okay, guys, you know this story that our forefathers have held to for so long. This is one of the greatest stories about Abraham, his faith tested. That it's a story not of works righteousness, it's a story about faith. You please God, Abraham pleased God by faith. And so Abraham's example challenges us when we're faced with perplexing trials. That was, as we're going to see, an incredibly perplexing trial. We all face perplexing trials at times. And we can learn from him. You see, when we can't see how God is going to make something work out, that's not a call for us to take over. We think it is. We think that, God said to do this, but I'm not seeing how that's going to work. And so we take it on and we worry about it. You know, there's other ways you might respond that are sinful. That's a common one. You see, it's instead a call for us to do our job better and let God do His job. So Abraham's example challenges us here. This particular example challenges us in two ways. The first is this. Obey God's clear commands. When I say that, I don't mean that well, there's some commands that are clear and some aren't. His commands are clear. My point is that because His commands are clear, as opposed to the solution, which isn't always clear, the commands are clear, so obey them. We're going to see that in verses 17 and 18. Obey God's clear commands. Look again at verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. Faith obeys commands. That's what faith does. That's what comes natural to faith. God doesn't call us to figure everything out. You see, when God gave this command, after giving a promise and now a command, and as Abraham tried to reconcile those two, to his human mind, to his limited understanding and his limited ability to see everything, it appeared as though the command jeopardized the promise. And what I want us to do is to notice the circumstances that the writer spells out for us. And this is very instructive for us. I want us to pay attention to the author's method. What is he doing here? How does he do that? Because as he is pointing out to us from the Genesis 22 story, and we're going to look at that in a minute, but as he's pointing some things out to us from that, he's wanting us to observe these circumstances that Abraham was facing. Because that's where we connect with Abraham. You know, we're not, you know, a Jewish patriarch. We don't live back, you know, thousands of years ago. We don't live, you know, in the land of Ur and then leave and go to Palestine. You know, there's a lot of things that are different between Abraham and us. But this is where we connect with him in these circumstances that he experienced. And we're going to find that Abraham obeyed even though these things were true. And some of these were hard. The first is that he had received a perplexing command. That happens to us. God hasn't called any of us to kill our children. But he does give us perplexing commands. You see how we connect with him at this point. It's an intersection of our lives with his. As a rule, Abraham lived by faith. That's why he starts it out again. By faith, Abraham. This is how he lived. Not perfectly. But that was the governing principle in his life. He lived by faith. And so it says, here's this situation in which he was tested. God was putting him to the test. He said, okay, Abraham, let's see how you do in this. I'm going to give you something that's not going to make sense to you. You're not going to see where I'm going with it. You're not going to be able to see how I am going to work it out. And I want to see if you trust me anyway. You see, this is true for all of us. God gives us commands where we can't see how he's going to work it out. As I use the example, he's calling me to be a father to my girls, but he hasn't told me how he's going to work all that out. But he's told me, okay, these are the things you need to do, John, as a father. And you obey those. Now, I'd like you to turn back, all the way back to Genesis 22. Let's go back there and read the account that the author is drawing upon. Probably all familiar with it, but it's a good refresher for us. So, Genesis chapter 22. Genesis 22, beginning in verse 1. Now, it came about after these things that God tested Abraham. And he said to him, Abraham. And Abraham responded, here I am. And he said, take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah. Now, just stop for a minute. Think about somebody you love dearly. If you're a parent, you can think of one of your kids. Pick the one that you like. Deron's over naming them off. No. Somebody you like, somebody you love dearly. And if you're convinced that, you know, it was God talking to you, for Abraham it was obvious. He said, okay, I want you to go offer them as a sacrifice. You know, you got to let that sink in a little bit. You know, we look back at this and we kind of whitewash it and it didn't feel so bad, but you got to think about it. This is his child, the one he had waited for so long that, you know, it's not like, okay, Sarah, you know, we're not going to have kids. Okay, well, you know, you got to have an heir, and, you know, and they came up with different ways to try to work that out, and it turned out bad. And then God does give them a child. And he's so happy. Every day after Isaac's birth, he's happy. He's like, God gave me a son. And he's made a promise through that son. And so God comes to talk to him. And you know, you think about how we all wish God would talk to us. I mean, verbally, audibly, you know. Be careful what you wish for. Right? Because God comes and talks to him. He says, go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you. You know, at this point, Jonah's running, right? Not Abraham. And this blows me away. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey. I don't know. I hope I would do that. He took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son, and he split wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. And notice he said there, he's mentioned already twice, burnt offering. Okay. And on the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. And Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go yonder, and we will worship, and we will return to you." And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering, here it is again, and he laid it on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife. I don't know how he carried that knife, honestly. And so the two of them walked on together. And Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, "My father?" He said, "Here I am, my son." And he said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" And then Abraham, saying more than he probably realized, he said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And so the two of them walked on together. Then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and he took the knife to slay his son, but the angel of the Lord called him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." He said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Then Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him, a ram caught in the thicket by its horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the place of his son. And Abraham called the place, "Yahweh will provide," as it is said to this day, "In the mount of Yahweh it will be provided." That's the name of God, Yahweh Yireh, or some say Jehovah Jireh. Then the angel of Yahweh called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, declares Yahweh, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. Indeed, I will greatly bless you, and I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens, and as the sand which is on the seashore, and your seed shall possess the gate of your enemies. And in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice." One of the things that's so startling about that passage is Abraham's unquestioning obedience. I want you to take your son, and God pointed out the fact that your only son, whom you love, he had to remind Abraham of that. And I want you to go do this. And Abraham did it. Just as simple as that. He's not like, you know, with the Sodom and Gomorrah episode where, you know, he's you know, trying to negotiate with the Lord. Here, no. He just, okay. Gets up early in the morning. And he gets everything. He gathers. He just gets to work. Even though the command seemed destructive to the promise. He didn't know how God was going to make the promise happen if he killed his son. But one thing was certain. Obedience is the only option when God commands. That much was sure in Abraham. Is that if God gives me a command, the only option is to obey. See, God said, "I do." That was how he operated. And what happened is it showed what he was made of. It says here in past tense, he offered up his son. Now we know he didn't actually kill his son. But in his heart, his son was dead. He fully intended to kill his son, as was obvious in the story as we read it. That an angel had to step in and stop him. Because he was fully intending to slay his son. His son was as good as dead. How do we know that he really was planning to kill his son? How do we know he wasn't like, okay, Lord, I'm going to get ready to do it, you know. Still, no. Because why else, as we're going to see later, he believed that God could raise his son from the dead. You don't raise somebody from the dead if they're not dead. Right? He fully intended to kill his son. Okay, that was the first circumstance. The second, he had received the promises. Now, that's a good thing until it looks like those promises aren't going to happen. Or they might not happen. But he had received the promises. And so the command and the promise, these are in conflict with each other. They're colliding, at least in his mind, they're colliding with each other. And the promises seem to be in jeopardy. What promises first, foremost on his mind? Look at verse 18. It was he, Abraham, to whom it was said, "In Isaac your descendants shall be called." And it's showing us here that the problem that he faced resided right here between the command and the promise. He had this promise, a wonderful promise, but they seem now to contradict each other. You know, okay, through Isaac I'm going to bless you, and you're going to have all these descendants kill Isaac. You know, and so now they're in conflict, or they seem to be. They seem to be contradictory. How could God honor both? And so what we find is that God's character is on the line. Because God said he was going to do this. And if I go obey him and kill my son, is he really going to carry out his promise? So his name is on the line. And so at this point in the story, as I pointed out, what do we find Abraham doing? God says, okay, go and you know, sacrifice your son. He sacrifices him. He offers him up. He does everything. He just gets busy and starts working to carry that out. Now, let's think through this conflict for a minute. I mean, he's trying to reconcile these two revelations from God. God had given him his word that here's a promise. Through Isaac, your descendants are going to come. And now he gives him another revelation. He speaks to him personally and says, okay, I want you to go and offer him up as a burnt offering. Now, it's important, though, for us to recognize that these two don't contradict each other. Never did God say to Abraham in the past, don't kill Isaac. He never said that. So, you see, this isn't an actual contradiction. It just is perplexing. It's hard to see. If he's dead, how are we going to have kids from him? Because he hadn't had kids yet. So they don't actually contradict each other. But the conflict in Abraham's understanding is, how is God going to carry this out then? How is it going to work? And so it was a conflict of truth. Is God really true? He said he was going to keep this promise. Is he true to his word? Did he tell me the truth? Is he going to keep his word? And what happened here is that another one of God's attributes, you know, his truth is on the line. And another one of his attributes comes to the rescue. You see, there was something else he knew that he knew he could trust in. He knew he could trust in the fact that God has all power. As we're going to see, he knew that God could raise Isaac from the dead. That he was omnipotent. God had that kind of power. Tests of faith challenge our trust in an aspect of God's character. That's really what's happening when we're tested. Is that there's a particular attribute of God's, and what he does is he puts it on the line. God puts his name on the line. And he says, okay, here's one of my attributes. Are you going to trust in that? And the way you do it is, if you're at all a little shaky on this one, guess what? You've got all these other ones to trust in. You go and you pick out these, and you trust in those. faith stands, when one attribute of God's character is on the line, faith stands on the others. Draw strength from the attributes that you know and trust. If there's ever one that God's testing you on, then draw upon the others that you're sure about. You see, and draw strength from those. You see, what God does is that in our lives, in the lives of His people, those who are people of faith, He circles through His attributes. And He says, okay, will you trust me in this episode on my truthfulness? And then at another time, He circles through and takes on another one. What He does is He takes one of His attributes and He puts it on the line. He says, okay, you're going to trust this. I'm going to prove myself to you. Will you trust me? And then He just cycles through His attributes. Because what He's trying to do is He's trying to build us up to a trust where we trust in all of His attributes. Because why? They all stand or fall together. You can't say, well, you know, I like this one, but I don't like that one. It doesn't work that way. It's all or nothing. And so God wants to build each of those. He does them one by one, but He uses the others to help make our faith in this one strong. And so He just cycles through them like that. Now, a third circumstance that Abraham found himself in. When you look at this from the human perspective, it doesn't work. Okay? I'm going to give you a whole lot of descendants through Isaac. Now kill Isaac. That doesn't work on the human level, right? We couldn't make that one work. You worry all you want, you're not going to make that one work. And there's a significant point here. At the end of verse 17, he says that Abraham got busy offering up his only begotten son, or better, his unique son is a better way to translate it. In the Genesis narrative, your only son, the son you love. You see, the only son that Abraham had through the promise, through Sarah. This one, the one you waited for so long, the one you've rejoiced in for all these years. That one. The point is, Isaac was irreplaceable. You know, it wasn't... Abraham, you know, he couldn't say, okay, well, you know, maybe God will do another miracle and Sarah will have another baby. Or maybe I can go find Ishmael and try that again. No, Isaac was irreplaceable. And so how did Abraham handle this? Well, first we saw that he obeyed God's clear commands, and that's the challenge to us. And now second, calculate God's character traits to build confidence. Calculate God's character traits to build confidence. Look at verse 19. He considered that God is able to raise men even from the dead, from which He also received him back as a type. Did you notice that we have another thinking verb here in Hebrews? Our writer loves those. Why? Because you have to know stuff and you have to think about it before it can do you any good. And that was the problem that his readers had, is they weren't studying their Bibles, they weren't thinking about the things of God, and so they didn't have a good, strong foundation. They weren't growing. And the one he uses here, in my translation, says considered. It means to calculate, to count. In other words, you draw a conclusion based on firm evidence. Okay, I think everybody here is pretty sure that 2 plus 2 equals 4, right? I mean, at least you've had math yet. A few little ones, maybe not. But we're confident of that. Okay? And we pick on that when we use it as a great illustration. We talk about 2 plus 2 equals 4 a lot, right, in illustrations, because we're also confident of it. Now, before you know even what 2 is, then we wouldn't be confident of that. But we have these things that we have firm confidence in, 2. And you add 2 to that, it's 4. And so when we, in the same way, you know, try to calculate our way through a spiritual problem, what we have to do is reason through it, consider what we have that goes into it, the factors that go into it, the two and the two, to draw a conclusion. We come to an inner conviction. Faith calculates using God's character traits. You see, it's not two and two, it's not numbers, but we're counting, we're calculating, we're reasoning through God's character traits. You see, Abraham found himself in the absence of an explanation on how God was going to work this out. And we saw that he had an idea, but it wasn't the one that God chose. So he didn't know how God was going to work this out. But he did have something to work with. He had God's character. And this is where faith comes in. We've talked about this before, the three aspects of faith. He had knowledge. He knew that God was all-powerful. And even though we didn't have, like, you know, 1 Corinthians or Romans or something like that, you know, spelling out back in Abraham's day the doctrine of the resurrection. And some people look back, they couldn't have believed in that back then. Oh, really? I mean, he expected to come back with the boy after killing him. He believed in resurrection. He had knowledge. He knew that God was omnipotent. He had all power. And so he calculated that, okay, God can raise him from the dead. If he has all power, then he can bring people back from the dead. And so that provided him the conviction about what he knew. He had knowledge, now he had conviction, the assent, if you will. And then he had the confidence to trust in that, because he had confidence to trust in God. God, he knew God was faithful. He knew God was able. And he trusted. Now, I want to take a second just to point this out. If you're not often with God, and if you're not often in His Word, you're not going to have anything to calculate. You're going to be like that little child who hasn't had any kind of math yet. They don't know which of these and how many of these is 1, 3, 4, 5. They're not going to be able to pick out 2. And what's that going to leave you with? Making up stuff on your own. Which is what people do. Well, my God wouldn't do that. You see, we've got to spend time with God. We've got to spend time in His Word. We've got to be chewing on it and thinking on it, and before we can have anything to calculate with. It's like an abacus? Is that right? Going way back. Before me, we had slide rules, you know. I'm only somewhat of a geezer. Okay, we had slide rules back then. But it's like an abacus that didn't have any of the little balls on it. Didn't have anything to calculate with. If you start with the wrong facts, you come to the wrong conclusion. And if you just accidentally hit the right conclusion, you're not going to have any confidence it's the right conclusion. You've got to have confidence in the facts. Calculating. It weighs truth. It tests truth. And then it clings to truth. Faith is not blind. Faith isn't ignorant. Faith is filled with volumes of rich truth that we can count on. And that rich truth, the volumes of it, are in here. We've got to get in here and get it into here, into our hearts. Now, you may be saying, okay, John, you were talking in an earlier lesson about faith isn't seeing. Well, we actually need to modify define that a little better. Faith is not... We need faith because we don't see the solution to the problem. We don't see how God's going to work it out. And so we need faith that He is going to work it out according to His plan. But that doesn't mean faith is blind. Faith does see. We talked about that last time, right? There are things that faith does look at. It can see and it trusts in. And in this lesson, what are those things? Those are the attributes of God. Faith sees those. It has to. Or it's just blind ignorance. Now, this idea of calculating, let's change metaphors just a little bit. Let's say that we're taking a hike through, you know, we're in Arkansas or somewhere, and, you know, beautiful area, and we're going through the woods, and we're hiking, and we come across a stream. And if you've ever crossed a stream, you know what I'm talking about. If it's an established trail, somebody has put some rocks, preferably some flat ones, and they, you know, and hopefully they weren't, you know, really tall with long legs, you know, for people like me. You know, they were just the right distance apart. But what do? Do you just go lumbering right along? No. I mean, you end up in the water if you do that. Right? What do? You look at the first one. So you're observing it. It's flat. Current isn't, you know, making it wobble. And so you put a little bit of weight on it and test it, right? And then you put all your weight on it if it holds up. And then you do the same thing for the next one. That happens faster than that. But that's what we do. Or you end up in the water. Okay. So that's this idea of calculating, counting. It's testing it, checking it out. Can I put my weight on that? Can I trust in that? Is it going to hold me up? And the attributes of God are sure stepping stones in our path ahead of us. And so Abraham calculated. He said, you know, I wholeheartedly believe that God is able. He has all power. He's like, I don't know if that's how God's going to work it out. And it wasn't. But he knew that God could. That's one way. God may have another way, and he did. They knew God could work it out. And so when God said, Abraham, I want you to take your only son, and I want you to go sacrifice him, he's like, okay. Yeah, there's stuff bouncing around in his head, I know. But he's like, okay, I'm not completely sure on this, but I know God is able. And so I'm going to go ahead and do it. Because God told me to. Faith obeys. Now, I don't know if you're like me. Always when I read that Genesis 22 passage, I always thought about how Abraham's faith was such that God could raise up Isaac from a fatal knife wound. That isn't at all what's presented to us in Genesis 22. I pointed it out. I think it was mentioned three times there. Do you remember what that was? What kind of offering was it? A burnt offering requires what? Fire, burning. Which turns the sacrifice into what? That is what Abraham believed God could raise Isaac up from. That's faith. This is not like Lazarus. His body wasn't all burned up. And this just blows me away. And this clicked with me, is that Abraham believed that he could kill his son and burn him to ashes, and God could still raise him up from that. That's incredible. Incredible faith. Because why? He believed God is able. The power of God is not limited by the life of man. The power of God extends beyond the life of man. He knew that even though Isaac was irreplaceable for the promise, that the promise was not dependent upon Isaac's life. It was dependent on the power of God. You see, and that is what Abraham trusted in. Well, we wrestle with things. You know, how are they going to work out? You know, am I going to lose my job? What's going to happen if I lose my job? What's going to happen if my child turns away? What's going to happen with this or this or this? And all these things that can go south on us. And we worry about, the worry is, how's it going to work out, right? How's it going to turn out? And for Abraham, the issue was, how was God going to fulfill his promise? How was God going to keep his word after telling me to kill my son? And God's promise was on the line. And here's the lesson. Abraham calculated this and reminded himself of this. I can't see how God's going to work this out, but you know what? It's not my problem. It's God's problem. It's not my problem. And oh, how we need to remind ourselves of that. Because so often we try to make it our problem. And we try to worry and fret and you know, work a million miles an hour. And we just try all these things. We get, you know, angry, whatever. You know, it's all involves sin to try to make things happen. We need to remember it's not our problem. Our job is to trust and obey. It's God's job to work everything else out. And so we're told of the blessing that came to Abraham after he did go through as far as, I mean, he was willing to go through the whole thing. The author tells us that he received his son back as a type from the threshold of death. And this is literally a parable. It's a parable that God raises people. Abraham thought that I could raise your son from the dead. And figuratively speaking, you get him back from the dead. Because in Abraham's heart, he was dead. He fully intended to kill his son. And he got him back. It's a beautiful parable for the rest of Abraham's life. God is able. Biblical faith obeys God's commands. His clear commands, even when the solution isn't clear. Biblical faith trusts in God's attributes to work things out. Biblical faith does what God says to do. Go do this, do that, don't do that. Faith says okay, and it obeys. But faith also trusts that God has everything else figured out. And He knows how to work it out. And He is able to work it out. Let me ask you, do you know God's attributes well enough to have something to calculate with? If you don't, there are good books that can help get you into the Scriptures to learn them. Arthur Pink's Attributes of God is wonderful. It's a great place to start. If you've been there and you want more, you're willing to bite off a bigger chunk, Charnock's Attributes of God is another wonderful work. A lot more work, but well worth it. But get into the Word of God. Know His attributes. Learn them. Observe them. Test them. And then trust in them. That's what He calls us to do. Greg?